I think it's safe to say that we are more aware of our mental health now than at any other time in human history. There are entire industries built around self-help, wellness, and motivation. We have generations of brain research, studies, expert advice, and medicine, and we are constantly reminded to take care of ourselves and to make it a priority. Yeah, there's never been a time when we've known so much about what makes us feel so bad. So, how come we still feel so bad sometimes? If you're listening to this show, I'm going to come right out and tell you that we're not going to answer this question or solve this problem. This show is not about answers. It's about the discussion. The discussion around peace of mind, our mental wellness. A discussion that some of us have daily and others may be putting off. On this new weekly show, we'll be talking about why we feel the way we do, how universal it is to not feel fine, and talking with experts who may be able to point us toward the help we need. My name's Kyle Lewis. I'm joined by Angie Lee, and this is Peace of Mind, a conversation about mental health, wellness, and the never-ending quest to feel okay. Okay.
Go ahead and start the show.
Cool.
Go for it.
Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome. My name is Kyle Lewis. I am the Communications Director of the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board. I am joined by Angie Lee, who is the Executive Director of Safe Harbor Peer Support Services. And welcome to the first ever episode of Peace of Mind on My 96.7 and Classic Rock 95X. We are so thrilled to be bringing this show to you. We got to thank everybody for having us here. And, you know, I think some introductions are appropriate here. Angie, you are fairly new to the area, as I am, but tell me a little bit about who you are and tell me a little bit about Safe Harbor.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Angie Lee. I'm the Executive Director of Safe Harbor Peer Support Services. We are a certified peer support organization. We are certified through the Ohio Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services. And we are that place where people can come, whether it's their first step in their journey towards recovery, or maybe they're getting near the end of their step of their recovery and they just need that little extra support. And that's what we are here for. We are here to be able to provide, in a very non-judgmental setting, a place where people can come for wellness programs, other type of programs, but really to be around other people who know what you're experiencing, who know how to navigate the system and can help you through it and maybe offer you some additional advice. So we're here Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. We have two centers located in Delaware County and Morrow County. And you know, what's great is we're free of charge. So again, you don't have to worry about that. We want to help you recover. We want you to be the best you can be.
Well, the price is right, and the company is great, and the facilities are fantastic. So if you need to check, if you're needing some help, I highly suggest checking out Safe Harbor Peer Support Services. So what is the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board? As the communications director, I get asked that question more than anything else. And basically what we do is we take our budget, which is largely funded with a local property tax, and we put it directly into mental health services for people in Delaware and Morrow counties. So, you know, there may be times where insurance doesn't cover everything and, you know, you need some help here and there. We also do a lot of sponsoring of special programs and special treatments and things like that that really, really help people. But I think what people are mostly going to want to know, we could sit here and drone on about our organizations all day, is why the two of us are sitting in these chairs here talking to people early in the morning on a Saturday about mental health. And so, Angie, what is it that drew you into work with mental health?
You know, I believe on some level fate. My entire career, I've been primarily in the public service. I've always worked with marginalized populations and other populations when it comes to mental health, addiction, criminal history populations. But the real, what hit home for me was about 5 years ago with my daughter, who was 10 at the time, who had been bullied in school. And she came to us and told us everything that was going on. And to be honest, as a parent, everything that I knew, all my experience, every step I knew I was supposed to take, just kind of went out the window for a while, because all of a sudden I was put into crisis mode.
Sure.
And so, you know, and I know we're going to talk more in an upcoming episode from the parenting side of perspective, but what I realized was here I had resources, mm-hmm. I had connections, we had insurance, and yet this still was something that was very difficult to navigate. And to be able, you know, I would sit back and I would say, how do parents or caregivers do this when they don't have that information that I had, having that knowledge base, because it was difficult for us as parents. And so that's why it really became important to me to really, you know, when this opportunity came up with Safe Harbor with mental health, to really kind of talk about it.
Sure.
You know, that was the other thing, was my husband didn't want to talk about it because he was so afraid of the stigma and what my daughter's friends' parents would say. But for me, I wanted to scream it at the top of the roof. I wanted people to know. And the more I talked about it, the more I learned that people that I've known for 10, 15, 20 years have gone through the same experience.
Absolutely. And that word you mentioned, stigma, I think as somebody who's not a clinician, but I work in mental health, you know, a communications worker, I work with some fantastic clinicians, or former clinicians, excuse me. And, you know, we do work with a lot of other clinicians in the area. It's really getting past that first hurdle, and it really hasn't been until recently that we've seen examples of very prominent people stepping out of the shadow of the stigma around mental health and saying, hey, this is an issue. This is something we need to take care of. Very, 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 I mean, almost over talked about at this point with Simone Biles, the American gymnast at the Tokyo Olympic Games, where the problems she was having mentally competing kept her from being safe in the competition, so she withdrew. And, you know, there's some backlash to that, but I think more than anything, we're seeing people, you know, with just an outpouring of empathy and a lot of relating to that. So getting past that stigma, you know, Angie, you and I, technically, you know, not to give anything away, we're from different generations.
Yes.
by the book.
I'm more seasoned than Kyle is.
we're very, very similar old souls, I think. But technically, you know, as a Gen Xer, where did you first understand that stigma was something you had to overcome with mental illness? Or what was it like for you growing up thinking about this?
Oh, no, people didn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't something anybody talked about growing up, and there had to be something wrong with your family if someone had a mental health illness. And even my husband, his brother, was schizophrenic, but people said that he wasn't schizophrenic and he wasn't in a home because he was schizophrenic, that he had traumatic brain injury. And so people always are trying to, you know, that's what it was like. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the biggest thing for me growing up was if you went and saw a counselor, it was a sign of weakness,
absolutely,
not a sign of strength. And so that's been a huge difference. So it's nice to start to see this change that's going on. I just think we have to capitalize it and keep reinforcing it and keeping it in the front of people's minds.
I was fortunate enough to come on the morning show here, the Breakfast Club, and Mark and I were discussing Simone Biles and discussing how, you know, as smart and as, you know, quote unquote woke as you can be about mental health, sometimes you're fighting against decades and generations of oppressive thoughts with it, to where, you know, myself, somebody who champions mental health and stresses how important it is, maybe that first reaction is, oh, come on, I'm sure you're fine. And, you know, I see it in myself, you know, with reactions I have to situations where it's like, you know, well, maybe I should take a break here. Oh, no, you're fine. And I think overcoming that is going to be sort of the last step for all of us here. where it's much more talked about. We're much more aware of the issues that are plaguing all of us, and you know how bad some of this can get and how it can affect you physically and in other areas of your life. So, you know, going back to the stigma of family, I think that's really where it came from for me, where I came from a very large, very Catholic family, growing up just south of Dayton. I have so many aunts and uncles and cousins and everything. And my grandmother, who is 98 and still ticking and still as sharp as ever, God bless her. And, you know, then I'm the oldest of four kids, and I'm just surrounded by people my whole life, and didn't really have too many mental health problems until I turned 30 and I was faced with owning a home for the first time, becoming a father for the first time, and having a unstructured a job at the time. When I was working at that time, I was basically told, hey, this job's a blank slate. You can do what you want, which for some people is, you know, the greatest gift they can be given. For me, it was a nightmare. And when all those things started happening, I started getting some physical symptoms that I did not know what was happening. I thought I was dying. Turned out they were panic attacks. And with some help from my wife, I started getting treatment for depression. I started getting treatment for anxiety, and ultimately found out that at 30 years old, I was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, which, you know, sounds, which we have, trust me, one of my requirements for this show was if we started this show, I would get to have an entire show to just talk about ADD and ADHD issues. So with all that, I was so relieved to find a diagnosis and so relieved to start getting help. And then it sunk into me that I was going to go to a family Christmas or something, and I was going to be sitting there as the black sheep. And finally I mentioned, you know, well, I just started taking this. And my aunt from the other room said, oh, I've been on that for years. And then my other aunt from the other room was like, wait a second, are you guys talking about this? And one by one, I started finding out that anxiety, depression, ADHD, you know, intrusive thoughts, all these things have run in my family for generations, and none of us have just ever talked about it. And it was almost like a tipping point for my family where we started discussing these things, and, you know, we started comparing medications and comparing symptoms and everything. And, you know, my family is as wonderful and healthy as we ever have been. But now these things are all out in the open, and we're more aware of each other's limitations and each other's strengths, really. So that's where I'm coming from. And, you know, I mentioned the generational differences here, where I'm a millennial, so my job can't just be a job. I have to be saving the world with this job. So that is ultimately what drew me to working for the Mental Health Board here. And I saw an opportunity where, you know, the two biggest issues, I think if you ask people in the mental health career field, the two biggest issues you have, number one, stigma, number two, workforce, which we could have an entire show about workforce as well, and we may. So I figured with my job as a communications professional, a video professional, social media professional, all these things, I might be able to come in and help people have sort of the same aha moment that I had. So the more people getting help, the better. I actually want to see those numbers of people being treated go through the roof, because honestly, I feel like all of us could use therapy. All of us could use medication at some point in our lives. All of us could use friendly ears to talk to, and we can then take that, turn it around, and help other people with that. Is that what you see at Safe Harbor?
Yes, absolutely. The other thing I want to touch on really quick, because you brought up Simone Biles, and I'm going to say this from a parental standpoint. When my daughter was going through her anxiety and depression, she had been hospitalized several times for suicidal gestures and suicidal ideations. You know, it was a time when Kate Spade had ended her life, and Anthony Bodine, and Robin Williams. And I will tell you, each time something came up, I cried. I just broke down and cried.
Sure.
Because all I kept thinking was that here is my 10-year-old who doesn't have access to all of these things, whose brain's not fully developed, you know, and it was like, how is my child going to fight this? And again, going back to the idea of talking about it, what I learned and what we have to make sure we're cognizant of is the hope out there. We always hear about the bad things. We always hear about the sad things. Mm-hmm. We don't hear the stories of hope.
Absolutely.
And I think that's something else that as we go through this journey with this morning radio show is that we want to make sure when we talk about peace of mind that we are that beacon of hope. That, you know, the cliche, you know, it's okay not to feel okay and you're not alone. It's more than just not being alone. It's about that other people have experienced what you're feeling. What you're feeling is okay.
Sure.
And it's normal and it's natural. And there's things out there and providers and so forth that can help with this. And what we want people to do is know that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Absolutely. And, you know, a comparison that I make is, you know, I was a football player for 10 years and then I was in video production, which is, you know, can put a lot of strain on you. And every now and then I will get up and I will limp for an entire day. And I can walk down the street with my limp and I can see other people walking perfectly well and perfectly normal. Doesn't seem to have any pain in their hips or knees or ankles. And I will feel like, oh, there's clearly something wrong with me to be walking this way when everyone else is like this. We don't have that same ability to look at other people and say, oh, well, they're not beating themselves up over something they said in a conversation 4 years ago. You know, they're not obsessing over this. They're not, you know, going into a spiral here where they're stressing about school and work and everything else. So since we don't have anything to visually compare it to, you know, you have no idea what's going on in someone else's brain, and you may not know that what you're going through is not the way that your brain should normally operate. So it's very, very important that we let people know if you have questions or you have concerns, just ask. There's doctors out there. You can call Helpline, as we talked about earlier in the show. You can call any number of mental health services in the area, or, I mean, you can talk to friends. Because I can almost guarantee you will have a situation like I had at that family party where, you know, one person talked about their medication and then out of the blue, everybody was talking about what they're taking and you know, what kind of help they're getting. I recently had my high school class had their 20-year reunion. I was not able to attend, but from talking to people who were there, they said what was kind of a common theme from everybody who was talking was how much everybody was talking about how much they like the therapist or, you know, how much they like, you know, how much help they're getting from so-and-so or asking, oh, hey, well, what's that about? What can I do to get into that? Which is, I mean, on its face, sounds like it might be kind of depressing, everybody getting together and talking about their shrink or their social worker or, you know, whoever they're seeing. But I mean, really, it's so hopeful and uplifting to think about that.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually about a month and a half ago with some friends of mine from previous jobs, and we were talking about the schools opening up and so forth and kind of like all the, I don't say trauma that we've all gone through, the collective trauma that we've experienced because of the pandemic. And all of a sudden, all of us parents started talking about how everyone's kids we're seeing either a therapist, a counselor, mm-hmm. psychologist, psychiatrist. And it was just really interesting that you have different individuals from different walks of life. And we all had children mm-hmm. that were receiving some type of treatment. Because the one thing we want to remember is that mental health does not discriminate. It does not matter about your socioeconomic background. It does not matter about, you know, your race, your religion. It doesn't. Because it affects all of us. Because mental health is health. It is not separate and apart.
Absolutely. And that was almost the title of this show. And when, that was one of the first names that was popped around. You know, we've mentioned Simone Biles a couple times, and I think it would be appropriate to talk about some of the other athletes who have very publicly came forward before Simone Biles. Naomi Osaka pulling out of a huge tournament because of the stress that talking to a very invasive press corps, you know, they were causing her all kinds of mental problems with the questions they were asking, and she didn't want to deal with it. So rather than, you know, quote unquote, suck it up, as athletes normally have to do, she walked away and, you know, found herself on the cover of Time magazine as sort of the spokesperson for mental health and wellness in athletes. Before her, you know, you had DeMar DeRozan of the San Antonio Spurs coming out and talking about his mental health and how he'd fought depression. You had Kevin Love of the Cleveland Cavaliers coming out and talking about this. And, you know, even as far back as I can remember, as a former offensive lineman, you know, I couldn't stand the Pittsburgh Steelers, but somebody I always looked up to was Mike Webster. And, you know, he's somebody which, you know, now we know more about CTE and the negative effects that playing football for your whole life can have on you. But he went from winning multiple Super Bowls to wandering the streets of Pittsburgh, having sold pretty much everything he owns. So seeing that these issues exist in these people who we look up to and we see every day makes it much, much more easy to digest that, okay, well, maybe they're happening to me too. I do not know anything about the pressure of having a goat after my name in a hashtag, or, you know, having all those eyes on me while I'm wearing a singlet and doing seven flips in a row. I will never know what that's like, but I do know what it's like to feel like I'm not in control of anything. And, you know, I cannot say enough good things about the way things are going with pro athletes these days.
Well, and I had the opportunity several months ago to see Michael Phelps. And Michael Phelps is another individual who really speaks out on mental health, not only his mental health, but just how do we go about breaking that stigma. And he said one quote that has continuously stuck with me. And what he said was, "We are all imperfectly perfect." And
that's pretty good.
That is just such an amazing quote. We're all different, yet we're all the same.
Why does he get to be good at everything?
I don't know.
He can turn a phrase like that and be the most decorated Olympian of all time.
Hey, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, I need to go home and mow the grass and, you know, cook dinner and everything. So, but we all got problems. So, Angie, we're coming into, you know, our last segment here. You were the one who pitched this show to me to get me on board. What is it you want to get out of this show? What if this show becomes just a smash success and we're the biggest celebrities in Delaware and Morrow County, what would that mean for you?
Well, one, I'll ask you for a commission. Just kidding. No, honestly, for me, the reason why I wanted to pitch the show and why it's so important is because I don't want people to be afraid to talk about mental health. It shouldn't be. It should not be something that we're keeping quiet or we talk about in the shadows, or, you know, it's something that, you know, it's only certain people that have it. We need to really make sure that people understand that mental health is health and that it's okay to talk about it. And it affects all of us directly and indirectly. And the more we have a conversation about it, which is what the show is supposed to be about, the more we normalize it. It's not coming from a clinical standpoint where people have, you know, all these big words that half of them I don't even know how to say myself, or don't even know what some of them mean. And that sometimes can be a put off to people.
Sure.
And we want people to hear real life stories of people they know in their community, of people they respect in their community, to be able to provide those resources and know that they have friends in all of us.
Absolutely.
And they don't even, I mean, just talk to somebody and it's okay. That's what I want. I want to help break that stigma, but to have the real heartfelt conversations so people aren't afraid to seek help.
Oh, that would be fantastic. On top of your commission for starting all this, I think that would be a very, very wonderful silver medal to have here. So, you know, for myself, I think this is going to be a great platform to highlight a lot of the wonderful organizations and people who are working and, you know, going through the things we're going through, but also in a position to help people. And the more we can get them on here, the more people who will know their name and the more people who will know where to go to get help. I really think that would be just something fantastic for these two counties. And, you know, maybe this catches on and maybe people across the state start getting the help that they need. They can start checking out their own Adam H. boards or mental health and recovery services boards. You know, whatever they have in their counties, it's not hard to find. And I don't think people understand just how much help is out there once they're willing to ask for it. So on this show, we are going to be tackling a different topic every day, or excuse me, every week. And, you know, they're going to vary from, we're going to be talking about on our next show, what it's like to be a parent in this age when we know so much about mental health and to have children who have behavioral health needs, as Angie and I both do. And we're hoping that us talking about it might help other people start talking about it. And then all of a sudden we're all talking about it and everybody's getting the help we need. And, you know, it's just all good things. And, you know, we've got a couple other shows scheduled for you guys here, having some wonderful people in here. We're going to be talking about workplace stressors. We're going to be talking about first responders. We are going to be talking about marginalized communities in our area and how it affects them. We are going to be talking about suicide. These are things that affect every community, and I wish every community had peace of mind to talk about them. Angie, what are you looking forward to with this next show?
Really, for the next show on parenting is really kind of sharing our story and hoping that people can walk away with some advice on what to do and how to handle things. And again, you know, just knowing that you're not, there are other parents out there that are struggling as well.
Well, if you reach somebody, Angie, how can they get a hold of Safe Harbor?
Go ahead.
You can reach us at shpss.org, which is our website. And on the website, we have both of our centers listed with our phone numbers as well, and as well as my email address, which is alee@shpss.org. Thank you.
Fantastic. And if you are interested in learning more about mental health in Delaware, Morrow counties, excuse me, behavioral health, because it also includes addiction services, you can go to what I'm told is the worst web address in the history of Al Gore's internet, dmmhrsb.org. And we loved it so much that if you go to any of our social media pages, Facebook at dmmhrsb, Instagram at dmmhrsb, or LinkedIn at dmmhrsb. We've got a phone number too, 740-368-1740, or you can reach out to me directly at my email address, klewis@dmmhrsb.org. You know, it's hilarious that when you have an organization with a name like the Delaware Morrow Mental Health and Recovery Services Board, even when you shorten it, it's still as much of a pain in the butt to say. But we hope people remember it. So we have reached the end of our time for this week. We have to get out of the studio, otherwise the next radio show coming in is going to come out and kick us out forcibly, I'm sure. So thank you so much for being here with us at Peace of Mind. You can find this show on My96.7 every Saturday at 9:30 and Classic Rock 95X at 8:30. Thanks again for joining us on Peace of Mind. We will see you next week.